Moncrief on News Talk.
If you ever go to a sauna, you start yakking with the people around you, or because you're near naked, you act like a normal Irish person, keeping to yourself and avoiding eye contact. Rosanna Cooney is the author of Sweat House, the new and ancient Irish sauna traditions. Rosanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Let's start with the new ones. What's an outdoor sauna? I would have thought all saunas were indoors.
Yeah, well, what's fascinating is there's been saunas in Ireland for decades, right? But they've been kind of in forgotten corners of gyms. They've been in random little parts of a hotel, or, you know, they're in unloved corners that people might endure for a minute and then dash for the hot tub. But about 10 years ago, saunas started to be put out into the wild. So mobile saunas by rivers, by the seaside, in valleys, in forests. And that's where the explosion that we're now seeing is coming from, this kind of return to nature.
OK, and do the saunas have windows? Are you kind of looking out the window at nature?
Yeah, what's interesting is that Irish saunas, a lot of them do have quite like vast windows, like out to the seaside. And I had this great Finnish woman over with me recently. She said, "You guys are so obsessed with windows. Why do you want everyone to watch you?" Because in Finland, they have maybe a tiny slit of a window, or it's almost in total darkness because it's a much more internal experience. Whereas in Ireland, we've created this kind of bright, light, chatty space.
Right. And when people go in there, then how long do they stay in there on average?
That's totally, I think, at your discretion. Like, I think some people, you know, you see your fitness fanatics in there with their Garmins or their Apple Watches, and they're like timing it to the second. And when it hits 15 minutes, they're bursting for the cold plunge. And for me, like, I just tend to go with what feels right for me. But when I was writing my book and kind of gearing up to go travel internationally to try out different saunas, I was so terrified that people would think that I was like a fool or a weakling. So I kind of geared myself up to be able to stay in for about 30 minutes, but out of pure mental endurance. Like, it was not a healthy or wise thing to do. But I think it's like anything, you can build up your fitness with. I'm not recommending anyone do that, but you can build up your fitness with it. You know, you can test, and it honestly depends as well how hydrated you are before you go in. If you're a woman, depending on where you are in your cycle, you can be warmer and it can last, like, it can feel less comfortable for longer. So it's totally personal how long you stay in there.
Why is it good for you?
That's a great question. And the thing is, there's so much science out there that says, oh, it's going to reduce your mortality by 26%. It lowers your risk of stroke, of heart disease, of all these things. And what I would say about that is more research needs to be done on all these kind of long-term benefits. It's really interesting and promising, and you can kind of get excited about the research because it's doing so much for your cardiovascular system. But I think in the short term, what you feel after a sauna is like the same endorphin rush that you get if you go for a run. So it's that runner's high, a rush of positive endorphins like serotonin, dopamine, and a really kind of natural way to do that, rather than, you know, you might get a dopamine hit from your phone, but that's almost like a drug. Whereas this is kind of, this will elevate your mood and kind of sustain you. And the other really nice thing that it's great for is if you do it kind of in the evening time, it really helps you get a longer, deeper sleep.
Okay. And so the mobile saunas that you'll find in Ireland, are they normally routinely parked beside a river or someplace where you can go to jump into afterwards?
Now it's so varied. Like, you see them in car parks and there's cold plunges there, or they'll be beside, like, the ones people tend to love are and fall in love with are by the seaside and by a river or a lake. And then, but they're sure they're all over our cities as well, in kind of beside a pub. They're squeezed into really innovative little places. And I think that's because the demand keeps going there, because you might have a local one, which is in, you know, near your home, and it's near your workplace or whatever. But then you might travel for an hour to go to one that's quite special in a forest or something.
So it doesn't necessarily need to be. You can go in for whatever period of time suits you and then go home. You don't need to jump into something cold.
No, I don't think so. And often, like, if I'm not feeling the cold, I'll just go sit outside, cool back down and go back in. So people tend to do hot, cold, rest, repeat. And that rest piece is really nice. Sometimes in Ireland, you see people dashing between the hot and cold. But actually, if you give your body a chance to rest afterwards and come back into kind of an equilibrium, it's a really, you get a lot of benefits just in feeling, I think, calmer from that.
One of our listeners says the Germans love a naked sauna. My sister-in-law lives in Frankfurt. I've been there many times. I recommended a hotel to a friend, his wife and their 17-year-old. The hotel had a swimming complex with saunas. Unfortunately, I didn't tell my friend that he'd have to be naked in the sauna. On mainland Europe, is that more the norm, that everyone's naked?
Definitely. And there's a lot of places you go and clothing is forbidden. Like you wouldn't be allowed in if you're wearing togs, because they don't think that they're hygienic. So it's like a hygiene thing rather than anyone wanting to see you naked,
I would say.
They tend to be gender split, but then places like Germany, it's men and women together. And it's a different attitude towards nudity and bodies and the significance of seeing someone else naked, I suppose. But it definitely in Ireland, I've started to see what's called textile free sauna sessions being introduced. And so naked, nude saunas,
But they're calling you textile free.
Textile free,
yeah. That's okay. So if you wore a black plastic bag, that would be okay. Yeah. No textiles in that. Now, more interestingly, I suppose, than that, we've been doing this for hundreds of years.
Thousands.
Okay.
So one of the fascinating things about Ireland is you've got this huge explosion that's happening now. And we kind of feel like it's like a Finnish thing or a Nordic thing that we're bringing in. But actually, there's sweat lodges going back in Ireland. Archaeologists have found 3,000-year-old sweat lodges that were around during the Bronze Age, then later in the Iron Age. And then if you kind of fast forward to pre-famine period, we have these gorgeous stone domes that look like, you know, mini fairy houses. And they're the Irish version of sauna. And they're actually almost totally unique to Ireland as the way of the heat kind of formed. And people would have used them for the exact same reasons we go to sauna today, to heal aches and pains, for arthritis, for rheumatism, to spend time probably with family, friends, to tell a few stories. And there's still around 300 of these still standing around Ireland, but it's likely there was once thousands of them scattered through the country.
How hot would they get?
Well,
it might have to be a fairly short story.
So I was seeing records of people kind of saying, oh God, you wouldn't, you know, it's so amazingly hot and they're blisteringly and there was this and that. And I was kind of thinking, oh God, you've got Irish people in the 1800s. We're not good with heat anyway. And these people, how hot have they ever really been, you know? But then a great archaeologist in UCD did some tests on he rebuilt a sweat house. And he found that people could really easily, with 5 hours of burn time to kind of heat the sweat house in advance, could get it up to 90 degrees, which is what you'd find for a lot of Finnish saunas today. So they weren't exaggerating the heat. Mm. They really were. People were going in, whether for half an hour or longer or shorter, they were going into 90 degrees. And these sweat houses were almost totally in darkness. So you would have been in there naked.
Oh, right.
Irish people were going in naked with their friends and family. You know, no prudishness here.
Did it have any significance beyond kind of a health and fitness kind of thing? Was there a spiritual aspect to it, perhaps? Because the sound is very hot and it's dark. You might have a few thoughts.
It's definitely a question that's plagued my mind a lot. There's been nothing written down that indicates people were using it for a spiritual purpose. But what I've thought about a lot is that when you're sweating in that kind of space, there's a natural transformation happening there anyway. You know, what you're bringing, what's on the inside out, literally through your sweat. And I think it's really unlikely that in Ireland, as a country which we've had so many interesting customs and pishogues and fairy tales and lore, that there wouldn't have been something associated with the sweat houses, that there wouldn't have been some sort of mythology or superstition. And there's been some suggestion that they were used particularly, you know, around times where magic mushrooms were more prolific in our fields. I'm not saying that's what people were doing, but there's all these interesting ideas. People were brewing poutine in them sometimes, and they were using them as hidey holes as well. Fascinating thing that there's stories that, you know, British people didn't tend to see them. So you'd have Irish people kind of never revealing the location of these sweat houses. First of all, they didn't want their landlords to know about them. Yeah. They might raise the rent. But secondly, they used them. It was a private space. It was on the peripheral. It wasn't in the main thoroughfare of a town. It was on the outside. And I think that's interesting too. Why create a place that's kind of further away, that's on the outskirts, but is somewhere destined for you to go? I was up at an amazing one in Cavan a while ago. It was on the side of a mountain with this great guy, Frank White, who brought up divining rods and was using them to kind of, you know, see if there was energy. And for him, that he was like, they're going berserk here. You know, I don't know if it was the water that was nearby that was causing the divining rods to go. But there's a lot of mystery and lore surrounding them that I think there's still a lot that could be explored.
Why did they die out?
Great question. And I think there's no specific one reason, but what we've seen is that after the famine, people, you know, emigrated, they left Ireland, there was population kind of was decimated, and people were often moved off their land as well. So the sweat houses were built as part of people's community healthcare infrastructure. So every four or five houses, cabins might have had a sweat house in rural Ireland. And then people were literally moved off that land and they didn't bring the sweat house with them. And the other suggestion is that medical dispensaries became more common and people kind of didn't want to associate with the old ways as much. So they turned away from folklore healing, from traditional methods of healing, and move more into slightly modern times. But the last one to be used is up around the 1920s.
So, I mean, and you said there's like a few hundred of them still around. Might people mistake them for a beehive hut, or do they have that kind of shape?
Yeah, exactly. They look really like the beehives on Skellig Michael, like maybe less exactingly put together, but a similar idea. And what they can be mistaken for sometimes is like almost a pigsty or something, that kind of thing. Or some people have kind of drawn close comparisons between them and the lime kilns that would be common. But I think when you see one, when you actually get to see one, they're quite magical. Like they don't, they're not really like anything else. And they're generally kind of round and they're cozy little like hidey hole spaces. So
well, exceptionally cozy when they light the fire in there, I thought. Rosanna, thanks a million for coming in to talk to us today. That was Rosanna Cooney there, a journalist and the author of Sweat House, The New and Ancient Sauna Traditions.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.